that started Parshas Vayishlach. Parshas Vayishlach is the culmination of really Parshas Toldos, the culmination of Yaakov and Esav reuniting, a culmination of tsaros, of difficulties in Yaakov's life. The Parsha starts in 170, page 170 in the Chumashim. And the truth is that Yaakov has a lot more to go, right? He's got a lot more tsaros and a lot more, you know, obstacles to get through. But for right now, he's trying to put an end to the Esav chapter. He's trying to finish off what he started with Esav, really, or partially what Esav started, depending how you look at it. But for right now, we start off the Parsha, and Yaakov is trying to take all precautions that he can in order to make sure that when he meets up Esav again, he's not going to be in any danger, or at least he'll limit the danger, as we'll see. We talked a little bit last week about the parallel between Yaakov's journey from Beersheba to Haran and his journey now on his way to see Esav. In both situations, we mentioned how he was on his way to see family, and in both situations, he had a warranted apprehension, right? He was apprehensive about meeting Lavan, and obviously he was right, because Lavan then goes on to trick him, and he knew the history of Lavan, didn't think it would happen to him, it did happen to him, and then he stuck there for 20-something years. 20 years. And then there's some in-between years. Yeah. So he was warranted by Lavan. Now it's 22 years later, or 20 years later at least. And he's got to meet Esav again. So now he's going on to another trip. He's going into another meeting with family, who he's afraid of. And the question becomes, what's he going to do this time? Last time he got a message, we said last week, from Hashem, that Hashem was telling him he's going to be with him, that he gave him a sort of a positive attitude to be willing to go forward and to keep going with his mission without hesitation. Vayisa Yaakov Raglo, we talked about how he became a different person, according to Rav Hirsch. But now he's got another task. Now he has to face Esav. So how does he face Esav? Well, he does a lot of hishtadlus. He does a lot of his own work. He does a lot of preparations, right? He sends forth messengers and he sends forth, you know, gifts and tries to get ahead of the issue by telling Esav about himself, telling Esav about what he's going to see before he gets there. But as we know, even with that, it seems like he wasn't completely okay, because once he sends the messengers come back and tell him, Esav's ready for you. He's got 400 people, right? We saw, you know, we saw, what does it say? Achiv? What does it say? They come back and they say, at the end of page 170, Banu el achicha. We came to your brother, but he's still Esav. El achicha, el Esav. He might be your brother, but he's still Esav. V'gam halech l'kreschah, and he's also coming for you. The Arba Meosi Shimo, he's got 400 men, and they are ready to battle. And Yaakov's response is, well, that backfired, right? His response is, oh, goody. No, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od. He's very afraid. Vayetzer lo, and it pains him. Rashi tells us fascinatingly, Vayira Yaakov, he was afraid to be killed. But greater than the fear that he had a pain, which was what? Not that he would be killed. Shema Yehareg, Vayetzer lo, Im Yaharog Hu Esacherim. He was even pained, he was in more pain over the fact that he might have to kill somebody else. Obviously, an indication of who Yaakov was. But the story continues.
I have a stupid question.
No such thing.
Was there any reason why they had to meet up again?
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's no direct impetus. Why did they have to meet up again?
I mean, you know, they went there, you know.
It's not exactly clear. It's not exactly clear. Why did they have to? I'm not sure.
Maybe he knew he'd have to meet him eventually. You might as well clear the air and know what it's about.
Yeah.
I think.
If you look at the art scroll note, the footnotes on page 170, the middle paragraph in the bottom says, according to the Zohar, Yaakov took the initiative to seeking a reconciliation while Yitzhak was still alive, because given Esav's great respect for his father, it seemed logical that he would make peace with Yaakov to avoid saddening their father. So Yaakov was trying to hop a Ryan while Yitzchak was still alive. Okay? Ramban notes that Yaakov could not avoid this potentially dangerous confrontation because the direct route to his parents' home in the south of the land took him through Esau's habitat of Edom. Right? So it was just, it's going to happen either way. We can't walk around him. So that's basically a couple of different reasons. But Yaakov's even more afraid. And now what happens? He's making preparations. He's asking Hashem, Hatzileni nam yarachim yar Esav, kerei lachil osop, penevo v'ikani im avanim. He's going to kill me, he's going to kill my family. But you told me, Hashem, you told me we're going to be a great nation. So give me something that can, you know, reassure me that we're going to be a great nation. He doesn't really get an answer back, but he goes to sleep. And afterwards, he prepares all the gifts, even more gifts. And he sends them ahead. And then he splits up the camp. We've seen that before. And then he gives his messengers different messengers different plans to tell them to do different things with Esav in order to try to build up all of the preparations. And then the next day he says, okay, I've prepared enough. After all these preparations, he goes, he brings his family across the river. And then it says, the pasuk tells us, "Vayvaser Yaakov levado," and Yaakov is there alone. "Vayavek ishimo adalos hashachar," and he's there until the morning, and he fights with this angel. As we know the whole story, he's called Yisrael after this. A whole interesting dialogue between the two of them, and he gets a new name, Yisrael, because Sarisem Elokim Vatuchal. You fought with Hashem, and you were able to overcome. V'iman Hashem, you also overcame your fight with people, and then he's able to overcome Esav. After that also happens to be that Esav wasn't actually so upset, at least based on the story, the narrative that we have. But what's interesting is that when Yaakov's name is changed to Yisrael, he keeps both names. Right? Yaakov and Yisrael. Sometimes the Torah will call him Yaakov, sometimes the Torah will call him Yisrael. Now, in last week's Parsha, we also had many new names. We never found that any of them had multiple names, do we? Am I wrong? I don't know. It seems like all the Shvatim were named. They got their name, and that's it. Names are finished. That's their name for the rest of their life. We never find any other indication that their names were otherwise. We have multiple reasons for a couple of them, why their names were the way that they were. But Yaakov's name has two names. He has two names, Yaakov and Yisrael. What's interesting is that this parsha also has another character that we're introduced to, who also gets a name, but also gets two names. They don't know who I'm referring to. If we fast forward a little bit, after the story with Dina, which is obviously troubling, and we have to think about it and talk about it a different time. But after, I think it's after the story with Dina, they go to Beis El, talked a little bit about what happened there a couple months ago. Good. Now we're up to the sixth Aliyah, Shishi. And in the sixth Aliyah, we find that Hashem is in the middle of telling Yaakov all the wonderful things he's still going to get. He's overcome all the challenges, and he doesn't have to worry anymore. And he makes a Mizbeach, he makes a Matzeva, and he calls it Beis El, I think. Mm-hmm. Beis El and Pasuk Tasvav. And then he leaves Beis El. Vayihi od kivras ha'aretz lavo afrasa, vatelid Rachel, vatekash blidita. He's on his way after he leaves Beis El. We're on page 188. So he's leaving Beis El, and all of a sudden Rachel is having pain in her birthing process. Now, we hadn't even heard that Rachel was pregnant yet, again, but we did know that Rachel was hoping for another child, right? Because one of the reasons she says she names her child Yosef is Yosef li ben acher. Give me another one, right? It's an interesting name for a child, but I would not recommend it for anybody else. But Rachel is having her another child now. It's interesting, the word kivras haaretz is not very clear how far Kivras Haaretz is, but what's interesting about it is that we know in the history of the Jewish people, we have a place called Kever Rachel, right? So we can actually measure the distance between Beis El and Kever Rachel, and it's a machlokas between the Rishonim where the place is. But what's fascinating, if you look at the commentary of the Ramban is sort of analyzing this machlokas. Where is this Kivras Haaretz? What does it mean? How far is it from Beis El? Where is Kever Rachel? And the Ramban says in that commentary, sort of a moment of colloquialism, which you don't often find in the commentaries like the Ramban, says, but I have been zocha to come to the land of Israel, and I can see with my own eyes. He's literally looking at the land, and he says, I know where Kever Rachel is. I saw where it is. It's right over here, right by the way that Rashi says it. That's what the Ramban says, the way that Rashi says it, which is interesting because Rashi would never even saw Eretz Yisrael for his life. He had no clue what Eretz Yisrael looked like. And yet Rashi was able to piece the pieces together, and the Ramban, later on in history, 200 years later, was able to say, yeah, Rashi, you're right. I don't know how you knew it, but you're right. There are other times, by the way, in Rashi's commentaries where he's completely wrong about Eretz Yisrael. Gemara's in Gittin, where he's defining, you know, the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, and he's just, it's clear Rashi has no idea what he's talking about. It's just that he was giving his best educated guess based on putting the pieces together. In this situation, he was right. And the Ramban says so because he saw it firsthand.
Do we know where
Beis El is? That would seem that way if I remember correctly from the commentaries there. There is a place called Beit El in Israel. I don't know. I don't know if it's the same exact place. But whatever reason, the Ramban could figure out what the biblical Beit El was. Either way. So what happens? Page 188, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayhi b'haksho sach b'lidita. In her pains, in her birth, v'atomer la hamyalitis al tiri. And the birthing nurse says to her, don't be afraid, ki gam zeh lach ben. You're going to have a child. I'm not really sure what the preconceived notion was that she was undoing. What did she think? She was having a daughter? Did she think the son was going to make it? Not really sure why the nurse had to say that or what the purpose of it was. But then the pasuk tells us, unfortunately, vayhi b'tzeis nafsha kimesa, when her soul left her when she died, vatikra shemo ben oni, and she called the child ben oni. What does ben oni mean?
Son of my pain.
Va'aviv karalo binyamin.
So
Rachel had a dying wish. I'm going to call this son ben oni. And Yaakov says, yeah,
not
for me. I'm going to call him Binyamin. And we go with Yaakov. Right? We go with Yaakov's changing of his wife's final wish. His, you know, his high school sweetheart. Right? The one he was trying to be with the entire life. She has one final wish, to name this child Ben-Oni. And Yaakov says, sorry, honey, we're going with Binyamin. Which is fascinating not only because just the relationship, the respect of the last wish, but also because if you look at last week's Parsha, who names the children? All the wives. There's only one exception to that. What's the one exception? Possibly. The one exception might be Levi. Levi, it says, Vayikra lo Levi. It doesn't say Vatikra. But either way, that's for a different time. It could have been in Malachim that said that, not Yaakov. You know, it's unclear. You have to look at the Mefarshim there for a different time. But this is the one which is clear that Yaakov named the child. That's Binyamin. And it's completely against what Rachel wanted, which is so interesting based on the context of her dying. She's buried, Beis Lechem. Many of us have been there and been able to daven there. And he makes a matzeva there. And then they go on. Yeah.
Ben-Oni wouldn't really fit with Yaakov's connection to Benjamin. Ben-Oni.
Right. I mean, if you're saying if Yaakov would say, "Hey, Ben-Oni," it would be like that wasn't your pain, right? Is that what you're saying? Right. Oni means son of my pain. Rachel could call him that, but what did Yaakov have? What did Yaakov do to have that child, right?
Mm-hmm. Or they define the person.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not really
Right. So let's go into the name a little bit. So first of all, I noted that, and we're not going to really delve into this much, but it's interesting to note that the only two characters that we have in these two parshas, which are chock full of names, the only two people that we've ever seen have multiple names are Yaakov and Binyamin. Yaakov had Yaakov and Yisrael, and Binyamin had Ben Oni and Binyamin. Now Yaakov uses Yaakov a lot more than Binyamin uses Ben Oni. But it's interesting to note that they had multiple name options. If you look at the second source, so Rashi tells us, what is Ben Oni? So Rashi tells us, Ben Oni is Ben Sa'ari, the son of my, this says sorrow, Sa'ar could mean pain too. Why was Yaakov so set on Binyamin? I mean, Adkan, we focused on, how could you change it from Ben Oni? Well, maybe it's because Binyamin's a really good name. Well, let's figure out, let's find out. What's so great about Binyamin that Yaakov felt the need to change it? Says Rashi, Binyamin nira ve'enai lefi shehu levado nolad v'aretz Kanan. That only Binyamin was born in Eretz Yisrael. This is interesting, first of all, for a different reason, which is that the Ramban tells us that the only reason Yaakov was allowed to marry sisters was because he was outside of Eretz Yisrael. And part of this, as astonishing as it sounds, part of the reason Rachel had to die is because they came into Eretz Yisrael. And he wasn't allowed to be married to sisters anymore. Which is just, it's a startling statement. But we'll leave it for the sign. But that's what the, yeah.
I thought it was because she stole the trumpet.
That's why she had to die. Interesting. I don't remember that. I'm sure there might be a midrash like that or something that I'm not familiar with. But
because Yaakov says something like, whoever did it, let them die. Yaakov basically,
at the end of the parsha, what did he say?
Yaakov sort of...
Right. If a tzaddik says something, then, but what was his words there? What were his words? It must have been 164 at the bottom, maybe? Lo yichya, won't live. Doesn't say we should die, but won't live, whatever that means in the future. Whoever you find your God, he shall not live. Rashi says over there, nothing. Yeah, Rashi doesn't explicitly say it here. But... yeah, the footnote here in the art scroll talks about it. Does Rashi say it somewhere? Because they quote Rashi here.
In the English, it tells you on...
Yeah, Rashi does say it. Rashi says it later on. Yeah. Rashi says that that from this klala, Rachel actually died by Derech. So what's interesting about it, doesn't really explain why she had to die specifically now, but it definitely does explain
why
she was prematurely.
Also, when he met her.
That's why...
When Yaakov first met Rachel, he cried. And I think there's an explanation.
Oh, yeah?
She wouldn't be with him.
Oh, okay. That sounds more familiar to me also. But either way, so the Ramban says that that's why Rachel had to die, because they were going into Yisrael, and Yaakov couldn't be married to sisters. So if you look at the rest of Rashi, so he was the only one born in Eretz Canaan, the only one born in Israel. And therefore, what? She'adam ba me'aram naharayim, which is in the south, when you come from Aram Naharaim, Koshnever Menegah, Be'eretz Kanan, Haluch Menaso Anegba, and therefore Binyamin means Ben Yamin, Lashon Safon. The word Yamin means the right, which means from the direction that they're coming to, it means the north. Right? Ben Yamin means Safon, V'yamin Atavir Asam, Levigachum Alei. Going on still to the south, Binyamin therefore means Ben Yamin, where Yamin has the same meaning as in the north and the south. Meaning that Yamin means south. Let me see for a second. Oh, he's quoting a pasuk. Safon v'yamin atav rasam is the pasuk. North and south, you have created them. A pasuk in Tehillim. And Yamin in that pasuk means Safon is north, Yamin is south. Therefore, it's referred to Bin Yamin as opposed to...
Yeah.
Yamin means south in this pasuk, yeah. And that's why it's written fully Yamin. I don't know what the other option was. But either way, so I guess you could have written it Memnun, Benjamin. Benjamin, I don't know. Benjamin means that it was supposed to be, that he was born to the south. Lashon, says Rashi again, Lashon, Sfon v'yamina tov rasam l'figach humalei. I don't know why I have that twice. Either way, so the reason Rashi tells us is because they wanted to recognize where Binyamin was born. They wanted to make sure that everybody knew geographic location of Binyamin's birth. That's why Rachel couldn't get her away, because we had to make sure that Binyamin was named after his place. It sounds kind of interesting that's why Yaakov needed to undo what Rachel said. We're not going to call him Ben Oni, we're going to call him based on where he's born. You know, I was born in a place called Sinai Hospital. Imagine if my mother called me Sinai. It's like, why is that a reason to call a person that name? It's kind of interesting. So now let's take a step back for a second. The word Yamin, according to Rashi, is referring to geographics. But is there another time in Yaakov's life where Yamin makes a significant appearance? Yamin meaning the right.
The fight with the
angel, does it talk about Yamin at all? When?
Oh no, I was thinking of splitting from Lot. Oh no, that's
Abraham. No, he says, well, there is a mention of the word Yamin, but that means if you go right, I'll go left. If you go left, I'll go right. Ufarasta, Yama Vakedma, Vatsafon of Anegba, it says all the directions there.
Yeah.
When he was born? Does it say right? I don't think so. V'yado ochezet ba'akev esav. We're thinking the wrong direction. Doesn't necessarily have to be something in the past. What's another time in Yaakov's life where he makes an emphasis on the right?
With Ephraim and Manasseh.
Ephraim and Manasseh. If you look at source number 3, Vayikach Yosef et Shnehem, Yosef takes his two sons, as Ephraim bimino, mismol Yisrael. He takes Ephraim in his right hand to the left of his father, who's now called Yisrael. V'yas Menashe bismalo mimin Yisrael. And he takes Menashe in his left hand to the right of Yisrael, Vayageshe lav. So, in terms of Yaakov's position, Menashe is on the right, and Ephraim's on the left. Vayishlach Yisrael et yimino, he sends his right hand, Vayashes al Rosh Ephraim. He takes his right hand, he puts it across, and puts it on Ephraim. V'hu Hatzair, and he was the younger one. Right? Obviously, we're pointing that out because the younger one's not supposed to get the main part of the bracha, the right hand. V'yetzmolo al Rosh Menashe, and he puts his left on Menashe. Sikel es yadav ki Menashe habachor. What does it mean? Sikel es yadav. So a whole different way if you can understand this word, sikel. But people are familiar with sechel. Sikel. Sin chaf lamed. He used his mind to purposefully and deliberately switch his hands. It could be understood in other ways also. But that's one way we can understand it. Sikel is hadav kiminasha b'chor. It's clear that Yaakov was doing this deliberately despite the fact that Menashe was the b'chor. Right, he knew the way that the children were put in front of him. He was supposed to put his hands straight out, and he crosses them instead. Now, what's important, and we're going to do a lot of what I call, well, not what I call, but a mathematics teacher would say, called the transitive property. We're going to make a lot of connections right now, so hold on to your seats. Says Yosef, when Yosef names Menashe and Ephraim. Why does he name them each of those names? Vayikra Yosef as Shem HaBachor Menashe. He names Menashe Ki Nashani Elokim as Kol Amali V'yes Kol Beisavi. Why did he call him that? Because Nashani got rid of all the difficulties that I had in Mitzrayim. Right? Obviously Yosef didn't have an easy job in Mitzrayim. So Menashe is called Menashe because he got rid of all the bad stuff. V'yas Shem Hasheni Kara Ephraim, and the second child he calls Ephraim Ki Frani Elokim Be'eretz Ani, because Hashem has made me fruitful. Not only has He taken away all the bad stuff, but He's given me a lot of good stuff. Hifrani Elokim Be'eretz. Okay, So Ephraim is named after the fruitfulness. Menashe is named after the negation of the bad. Now, if you look, and this will start to connect, if you look at Bereishis Memches in source number 5, Yaakov says something very interesting about Ephraim and Menashe to Yosef. And this is really the continuation of source number 3. What does he say? V'yata, and now Shnei Vanecha Nolodil Mechal Eretz Mitzrayim, your two children, who were to me, who were born to you in Eretz Mitzrayim, before I got here, Lihem, they're like me. Ephraim and Menashe, Keruven v'Shimon Yuli. Ephraim and Menashe are like Reuven and Shimon. Now notice the order that he put that in. Ephraim and Menashe are like Reuven and Shimon. Okay? Reuven and Shimon, that's how they were born. Ephraim and Menashe is not how they were born. Ephraim was first. Ephraim was really second, but he put him first. And what does it say when Yaakov gives a bracha to Reuven? Now we're going to start coming full circle. Reuven bechori ata. Reuven, you're my bechor. You're my firstborn. Kochi v'reishis oni. You are my first fruit of my strength and the beginning of my vigor. My oni could mean strength. It could mean vigor. So if we're going to look at Rashi for a second, what is oni? Kochi. Kimo mitzasi only. Merov onim ulein onim. It means strength. It means koach. According to Rashi in Vayechi. So now if we loop it back, Reuven is Oni. Reuven is like who in the breakdown of Ephraim and Menashe? He's like Ephraim. Ephraim and Menashe, Keruven and Shimon. Ephraim is Reuven and Menashe is Shimon. So Reuven, who's Oni, is like Ephraim. Now, is it, what's the next connection if we're working backwards? Ephraim is Oni, and therefore Yaakov puts his right hand on who? On Ephraim. He should have put it on Menashe, but he put it on Ephraim. So Yamin, for Yaakov, means Oni. My right hand is my strength. Ephraim is like Reuven, who is Oni, who is my strength. Therefore, when I'm giving a bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, I've got to put my right hand on Ephraim, not on Menashe. And now we can loop it back to Binyamin. Yaakov calls Binyamin, Binyamin, according to Rashi, because of a geographic concern. But according to our connections, independent of Rashi, or at least that Rashi, so Benyamin represents strength. It doesn't represent difficulty, it represents strength. And when Yaakov is approaching how to name his son, and Rachel says, what words? I'm going to name him Ben-Oni. Says Yaakov, I know what Ben-Oni means. It's the same thing as Benyamin. Because for me, Oni means Kochi. That's what we know from Reuven later on. And that's what we know from him putting his hands on Binyamin, on Ephraim. That his right hand is the person he puts his strength into. Reuven is Oni, and so is the right hand. And therefore, when Yaakov is looking at Rachel's last request, he says, you're right. We're going to name him Ben-Oni. I'm just going to put a little twist on it. The same word Ben-Oni can be encapsulated in the word Benyamin. So the truth is that Yaakov didn't change the name very much. He didn't say, Rachel, sorry, I'm going to do it differently. He said, I'm going to do it just with a different title. But it's going to mean the same thing. Ben-Oni means Benyamin. Ben-Oni means strength. If you look at the Ramban, in our week's parsha, so what does the Ramban say? Ben-Oni. V'anachon be'enai ki imo kereso Ben-Oni v'ratz talomar Ben-Aveli. My sorrow. V'aviv asa min-Oni kochi. Milashon reishis Oni. Says the Ramban, this Oni, according to Yaakov, Yaakov heard the word Oni and said, oh, I know Oni, that means kochi. Oni means strength. V'lachein kara oso Binyamin, ben hakoach, o ben hachozek. Ki hayamin bo hagavura v'hasplacha. The right hand represents strength. So that's how Yaakov was interpreting it. Ratza lios kore oso b'shem shekraso imo. And Yaakov wanted to give him the same name that Rachel gave him. Ki chen kolbanav b'shem shekaru osam imosam yikril. Because all the other children were also named by the mothers. So says Yaakov, I want to make sure that I want to do the same thing that we did by all the other children. Give him a name that the children, that the mothers gave. So he says, I'm taking Rachel's name, I'm going to just bolster it a little bit. But there's a little more to this equation. Because obviously, if Yaakov... I'm okay now. I think. We'll see. If Yaakov really wanted to give the children a name, like all... to give the child, Binyamin, a name, like all the other children got, so then he could have just left it at Benoni. Why did he decide to change it then? Just do it like everything else. Do it like all the other children were named by the mother. So the truth is, I believe there's an end of the Ramban, which for some reason I didn't put on this sheet. So I'm going to get up and get the Ramban.
If you look at the end of the Ramban, it's a little cryptic, but if you look at the end of the Ramban, he says one specific line, if I remember correctly, which is very telling in terms of why I think Yaakov might have changed it, even though he was trying to say the same name. Where the Ramban says at the end, thank you. Ver'izi b'bereishis rabba. Okay, so a couple different things. Kichen kolbana b'shem shekaru osam imosam yikril. The same name that the mothers gave is the one he wants to give. But the next five words, and for some reason I didn't put on the sheet, v'hinei targem oso letova ulegvura. He translated it to goodness and strength. Now, that seems possibly superfluous, possibly extra, possibly unnecessary. Why would the Ramban feel the need to say that line? And then he says the following. V'ra'isi b'reishis rabba ben oni ben tzari. Va'aviv karalo binyamin b'lashon ha'kodesh. The Midrash says, Rachel called him ben tzari, and his father called him binyamin b'lashon ha'kodesh. Right? So says the Ramban, v'lo yadati mahu. I don't know, what's this Midrash talking about? Ki ha'kol lashon ha'kodesh. Everything's lashon ha'kodesh. V'chein, shem kol banav lashon kodeshu. All the children were named in Hebrew. Aval ramzu l'masha amarti. Says the Ramban, they're perhaps alluding to what I said. Shetirgem halashon letova. He translated it to good. Lashon hakodesh doesn't mean Hebrew. It means a holy name. The Ramban might be saying this. And this is my interpretation. The Ramban might be saying that Rachel named the child Ben-Oni. And it's true, it can be interpreted in one of two ways. It could be interpreted like Rashi said, which means Ben-Sari, or it could be interpreted as Oni, as Kochi. Says Yaakov, I don't want anyone to get mixed up. I don't want anyone thinking that she named him Ben-Sari. I don't want anyone thinking that she named this child after a negative, after something bad. Because it's true, this was a difficult labor. But it's also true that she had tremendous strength when she went through it. Both Rachel and Yaakov realized that Rachel had unbelievable strength and perseverance in this episode. Rachel named her child Ben-Oni as if to say, I had to overcome this obstacle. I had to overcome this pain. And Yaakov says, you're right. But if people hear the name Ben-Oni, my pain, what they're going to think is that chas v'shalom, this was a negative experience for you. That you didn't want to give birth to the child. So says Yaakov, I'm going to make it more explicit for people that when they look at this child, they remember not your pain, but your strength and perseverance.
and therefore I'm going to give him a new name which emphasizes that aspect of it, which we both understand, which we both recognize is the purpose of what you mean. That Ben Sa'ari means I overcame my tsar. I overcame the pain, I overcame the difficulty. I'm just going to name him something that everybody's going to know is a reference to your strength, not to how you overcame your weaknesses. And I'm going to name him Ben Yamin, which no one can confuse for something negative. Now, if we're going to go back to understanding the Yamin, understanding Menashe and Ephraim for a second. What did we say was Yamin for Yaakov? It was the strength. If you go back to Menashe and Ephraim, what do you find? That what was it between Menashe and Ephraim in terms of their names? Menashe was Kinashane Elkim Be'eretz Ani. He took away a Kol Amali. He took away all my difficulties in life. And Ephraim, which was a negative, taking away a negative, overcoming a negative. And Ephraim was Ki Ephraini Elkim Be'eretz, that I've become great. That's a positive. Says Yaakov Avinu, we have to focus on the positive. We can't be bogged down by the negative. It's true, it's a wonderful thing. Menashe is unbelievable that you can undo all the negativity that happened in Yosef's life. That's obviously a significant and praiseworthy thing. But when I put my right hand on somebody, I want to be focusing on strength. The strength perspective. An emphasis on what good is coming, not just the negation of bad. And the same exact thing happened with Binyamin. Ben Oni, you're right. Of course, this child came through a difficult experience. But we're not going to focus on the difficulty of it. We're not going to focus on the negative aspect of it. We're instead going to focus on the strength perspective. We're going to focus on how good Rachel was. Bless you. How good Rachel was in her strength. And we're going to focus on that positivity as opposed to negativity. Coming up, we have a very interesting holiday. Holiday of Chanukah. And if you look at the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara tells us that the mitzvah of Chanukah is what? Ner ish ubeso. Each person and their household, v'hamahadrin, ner l'kol echav echad. You want to go extra? You're going to do one candle for each and every person in the household. V'hamahadrin min hamahadrin. And if you want to do even more, so what do? You're going to put 8 candles up in reference to each of the days, and each day you'll work down. The first day you'll do 8, the second day you'll do 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, till the end of Hanukkah. That's what Mahadrin and Mahadrin would be. Every person does different number of candles based on the day. Beis Hillel says, Yom Rishon Madlik Achas, on the first day you do 1, Mikan ve'elach mosif v'holich. You're going to go up in number. You're going to go more. You're going to add a candle every single day. What's the distinction between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai?
One's going up.
Right. One's
positive and negative.
Positive and negative. If you remember, we've spoken about fire before. What does fire represent? By Avraham Avinu?
Yeah.
It's man-made. What's man-made? You can either use the fire to destroy. It could burn down a house, like the Midrash was telling us, that he was passing by Bira Dolekes. The house was on fire. And Avram says, who did this? And Hashem, basically, the way that we interpreted it was, Hashem said the people did this. And Avram instead takes the fire and does something good with it. He illuminates. He warms people up. Fire can have a positive benefit or a negative detraction. And when it comes to the fire of Hanukkah, there are 2 aspects of the holiday. On the one hand, all the difficulties the Jewish people had. All the times where they couldn't learn Torah, where they couldn't keep mitzvahs, they couldn't give bris milah to their sons. All those difficulties that were taken away. And says Beis Shammai, when we celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah, what we're recognizing is all the destructive fire that we can now take away. So we start with 8, and slowly but surely we recognize and appreciate all of the miracles that reallowed us to live our lives without the persecution. We're taking away all of the fire, all of that destruction. Says Beis Hillel, it's the other way around. We're not taking away the difficulty, we're reintroducing all of that positivity. And we continue to illuminate. We add light every single day
and we focus on all the wonderful things we can now do again. We can now learn Torah again. We can now give bris milah again. Now we can study with each other and not have to use a dreidel to hide ourselves in a cave, right? And we're increasing the light, not diminishing the destruction. So says Beis Hillel, we're going to focus on the strengths, not the negation of the negatives. If you look at source number 10, the Mishnah Berurah tells us, when it talks about the story of Chanukah, Matzchil b'shmoni mei Chanukah, ki bevayis sheni shemalchi yap malchi risha gazri gzeros al Yisrael batul datam v'lo hinichlo som nasuk b'torah mitzvos. That the Greeks, they prevented us, and they got rid of all of our religious rituals. And they wouldn't let us do Torah and mitzvahs. They destroyed and they really impurified the entire base of Israel. And finally, Hashem had rachamim, had mercy, and through the Chashmonaim gave us this great miracle that we were able to overcome the Greeks and brought back the sovereignty of the Jewish people. Right, that's getting rid of the Greeks. But here's the shift. This is really a quote from the Rambam. But what you see in the Mishnah, there are two stages of the Chanukah. Of the Chanukah Nisim. There's the one stage, which is the beating of the Greeks. And then there's the second stage, which is the re-inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash. How do we celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah? We do say Al Hanisim, but the one ritual that we have is about the re-inauguration. It's not about the destruction of the Greeks. Now this is in contrast, in some ways, to Purim. On Purim, what do we talk about? How we beat Haman. Right? Haman, and we all boo. Right? Right? And we talk about how we Arur Zeresh, and we talk about Arur Haman. Right? We talk about both aspects. The destruction of Haman and the success of the Jewish people. On Hanukkah, the only thing that we do is light the menorah. This is a time to focus on our positivity. To focus on our strengths. And the truth is that this is something that in social work and in therapy is by far the leading strategy to helping people, which is what we call the strengths perspective. We don't focus on weaknesses and try to fix weaknesses, but we try to bolster strengths. And we try to analyze what do people do well and how can we do more of it, as opposed to saying what do people do poorly and how do we fix it, focusing on the failings, we focus on the positives, the strengths perspective. And if you look at one of the books I like to quote, although I haven't quoted as much as I should be, a book called Switch from Chip and Dan Heath. A fascinating, fascinating book. If you remember, I gave it once in Drusha about the elephant and the elephant rider. And one of their first chapters is a chapter called Finding the Bright Spots, about this expedition some people took on. They had 6 months to solve the malnutrition of Vietnamese children. And they say that tons of other people had come in and tried to fix things, and everyone was able to notice where the malnutrition was. People were poor, people didn't have clean water, people didn't have resources, so everyone tried to just throw money at it. Give them food, give them resources, ship it all in, but it never worked. Because you had to change the lifestyle, not just give them stuff. So what happened was that this one group they talk about goes in, and they say, well, in 6 months, there's no way we can get so many resources to millions of people. It's just not going to happen. Instead, what we're going to do is, they asked around to all the villages, who is well-nourished? Who's doing it well? Is there anybody that's been able to overcome this? And they found the single individual families that for some reason or another, their children weren't malnourished. And they started to study those families. And they noticed that they had split the meals up throughout different times of the day. It wasn't a morning meal and an afternoon meal. It was four meals throughout the day, which scientifically they figured out allowed the children to process the food better. When you stuff so much food at one time to a child that's malnourished, so the body can't properly digest it and can't properly break down all the nutrients. When you split up the meals,
So it gives the body an opportunity to break it down. Furthermore, these researchers found that these families were putting in parts of other greens and other proteins that other families weren't doing, even though it was readily available. They put in sweet potato peels, they said, sweet potato greens, right? Vegetation that everybody had available, but no one thought was good for a child. And they found out that the nutrients in the peels, whatever it was. So they found out that these specific individual families had already solved the problem without adding any nutrients or any resources from outside, from America. They didn't need more money. They just needed to focus on the bright spots. And instead of looking at a problem and fixing it, they looked at what everybody else was doing well and they did more of it. And they literally cured hunger and malnutrition in the Vietnamese children. And it lasted way past 6 months. And I haven't found, you know, I didn't look up to the modern day, but at least they talk about the success of Vietnamese children way after these people had come in, which was a simple thing. They didn't need to, you know, they didn't need to bring in tons of money or tons of resources. They just needed to find what was working and do more of it. And that's what Yaakov Avinu is sending as a message here. It's true, Rachel, Binyamin was Ben Sari, Ben Oni. But what we want to focus on is the strengths, not the negation of the negatives. The same thing is true about Hanukkah. Instead of Beis Shammai, the negation of all the negatives, of all the terrible things the Greek did. We're not talking about the terrible things the Greeks did. We're instead going to focus on all the good things the Jewish people could then do. And they started their sovereignty again in Yerushalayim. They rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash. They got the menorah back up and running. And that's how we celebrate Hanukkah. Not by the negation of the negatives. Of course, we mentioned it in Al Nisim. But rather by emphasizing the positives. That's what it means. Binyamin's name, the strengths perspective. Instead of calling him Ben Oni, which could be interpreted as being the negation of negatives, Yaakov says we're going to emphasize the positives. His name's not Ben Oni. Its name is going to be just as Rachel said it was going to be. But Benjamin, focusing more on the positive instead of the negative. Okay, you should have a wonderful week.